have a lot of favorite passages from the scriptures. What we read today might actually be my all-time favorite of all time for this week. From the letter to the Philippians, we read, "Beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things." If I had to boil down the entirety of the faith that I practice into a brief summary, I'd have to say all the passages about Jesus and then this one. Through this passage, we are instructed to direct our inmost attention toward the goodness in all of God's creation. When I read this passage, I find myself pondering, what might be pure in the world? What qualifies as honorable? How do I define excellence? There was much to consider in each of these details. And somehow I'm supposed to identify where in my daily doings I've demonstrated all of these qualities so that I can keep doing them. It's a big ask. As usual, Paul, the author of the letter to the Philippians, has a lot to say, and he goes into his traditional long list of details. Paul held God's people in very high regard, and that is the basis for pretty much all of what Paul writes. For him, the act of addressing this part of his letter to the beloveds reveals his certainty of our standing before the Almighty. His address is a foundational truth, and he tries to impart his understanding of that upon his readers. He opens his thesis by grounding all that he says in truth. Whatever is true, think about these things. When we do so, we discover an interesting path to explore in this short paragraph. One of the first things that we encounter is his use of the concept of truth. Paul says, whatever is true. What is true? What is truth? This isn't the first time we've heard this question asked in the New Testament. The answer seems to be, it depends on who you ask. The subject of truth is a matter of considerable philosophical debate. There are several theories of the nature of truth, and they each address different nuances of truth. There's the traditional model, which traces its origins to the ancient Greek philosophers. We call it the correspondence theory of truth. It emphasizes that true belief and true statements correspond to the actual state of affairs. There's the coherence theory of truth that requires a proper fit of the elements within a whole system. It requires something more than a simple logistical consistency. There needs to be a consistent integration and application of truth in all parts of any given system. Pragmatic truth is confirmed by the results of putting one's concept of truth into practice. What fails cannot be truth because truth always works. Constructivist truth is viewed as contingent upon convention, human perception, and social experience. Constructivists believe that representation of physical and biological reality, including race, sexuality, and gender, are socially constructed. Therefore, they are truth to the extent that they apply in a given context. I could go on all day with all of these theories because there's a whole lot more when you go looking for them. When we explore notions of truth, we immediately find ourselves on the deep end of the curiosity swimming pool. Paul gives us a framework of what he considers markers of truth. What is honorable, just, excellent, and so forth, direct us towards something greater. Those features are also identifiable within ourselves. We, too, are capable of truth worthy of reflecting the nature of all that Jesus taught us about revealing our faith in the world. It should be noted that this passage doesn't negate the importance of humility. Rather, it helps center our personal humility within the context of the narrative of the divine. God is the source and perfection of all of these things that we call truth. And we are made in the image of God. Therefore, we contain within ourselves, somewhere within the depths of our soul, the spark of the infinite goodness and truth of God. We are each capable of tremendous justice, indelible goodness, and excellence, and in all the other things that Paul lists. We are capable of all of these things and more. Paul encourages his readers to direct their thoughts towards these aspects of themselves and the world around them, and then act in the world around them from these characteristics. In doing so, they will reveal the nature of God's dream for the world in our everyday, ordinary experiences. While we could take the body of Paul's statement, beginning with truth and ending with the admonition to think about these things, as a summary of his thesis, I would argue that there's an even greater envelope into which Paul could put his letter. If we could distill this paragraph down even further to an even briefer summary of our faith, we might look at Paul's opening and closing salutations. If we look at Paul's details and lists that he provides in the body of the paragraph and then set them aside, what we are left is the nucleus of the human-divine relationship. Beloveds, that's you, and that's me, and that's everyone who lays eyes on this letter. Beloveds is what we are in the eyes and in the heart of God. We are the beloveds. This is not an identifier to be used lightly. Beloved is the core of our identity in the mirror of the nature of God in whose image we are made. It is that aspect of ourselves that God looks upon and thinks about every day. Everything else after this word are simply points of interest within the scope of being beloved, honorable, pure, excellent, just. And finally, Paul ends with, "The peace of God will be with you." As Paul stated earlier, just before we get to this paragraph, the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. What better security could there be for our hearts and minds? We don't have to understand it. We simply have to embrace it. Clearly, it was worth it. What repetition means. Repetition means pay attention. Paul could have said these two salutations alone, and he would have stated the foundational truth of the human-divine relationship. Beloveds, the peace of God will be with you. This alone could be enough to summarize the faith we strive to practice every day. To accept that we are beloved of God is to open our hearts and minds to this God of peace. And the more we think of all these things that Paul details, the easier it is to receive the God of peace and live into our role as God's people in God's creation. But to answer to the name beloved is to echo the God of peace. The God of peace will be with you. That's the truth. And that's the good news.